We're going to call the State Government Finance Committee meeting to order. Representative Nelson, do you want to move the minutes?
Sure.
Representative Nelson moves the minutes for March 29th, 2016. All those in favor of those minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the minutes for March 29th are adopted. Members, today we have House File 3511 before us. With that, Chair Davids, do you want to give us a brief description of your bill?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And if someone could move the bill, I do have an amendment to give in the shape that I'd like, if that's possible.
I'll move House File 3511, and your amendment is A1. I move the A1 amendment. To your amendment?
Yes, thank you. To the amendment, basically what this says is, I've been trying to work with the IRS on some of these issues, and I just received a letter yesterday or 2 days ago, a couple days ago, saying that we got your letter, we're sorry that Minnesotans are being hurt, we're sorry about it, but we're not going to do anything. So what this amendment does is basically has MNsure pay for the penalties the Minnesotans will be receiving, that there'd be a fund set up so that the penalties that Minnesotans are receiving through no fault of their own would be reimbursed.
Okay. Members, do we have questions to the amendment? Otherwise, let's get the bill in the order that the author prefers, and then we can kind of go from there. All right. We're going to move the A1 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? The A1 amendment is adopted. Chair Davids, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. As you're all aware, MNsure has failed completely. And there's basically four or five areas to look at, and we're going to be addressing one of those areas today. When I said four or five areas, one would be the 1095 issue. In tax committee at 10:15, we're going to be taking up the tax cut bill. There's another issue of a lot of Minnesotans going to be owing their many Minnesotans will be owing subsidies back because they've had a change of income. An issue that was heard yesterday was liens being put on people's estates, and then of course we need to analyze their budget projections, and of course we're not even anywhere close to what we were looking at. And Speaker Dowd named me co-chair of the Legislative Oversight Committee on MNsure, and so no matter how bad you think MNsure is, it's actually much worse. So that being said, today's issue before us is the issue of 1095A's. By law, the 1095A's have to be issued by January 31st. Now, that's a very important date. That's what the law says. I'm so privileged to represent Fillmore and Houston counties, and if you're familiar at all with Fillmore and Houston counties, you will know that it's very, very heavily agricultural based. We have a lot of farmers. Farmers have to file their taxes by March 1st. Many farmers did not receive their 1095As by March 1st, and many still have not received their 1095As, and I think it's like March 30th. So that's why about a month or so ago I wrote a letter to the IRS saying, hey, don't penalize Minnesotans that are being hurt by MNsure. Don't penalize them for something that they had nothing to do with. They did nothing wrong, but because of the total and tremendous incompetence of MNsure, they didn't have their 1095As. So now they'll be subject to penalties. And my response, I was surprised I got a response. My response from the IRS was, tough, we're sorry. When I'd get in trouble as a kid, my middle name's Michael, and when I heard the words ring out, Gregory Michael, I knew nothing good could come from that. And I'll never forget my mother one time, God rest her soul, said, Gregory Michael, sorry. I said, Mom, I'm sorry. Gregory Michael, sorry doesn't always work. How many times have we heard from MNsure, we're sorry. We're sorry. The IRS, we're sorry. Well, you know what? Sorry doesn't always work. It doesn't always work. This plan, this MNsure has failed so miserably. And I hope, and I've offered to commissioners, I say, hey, it didn't work. At some point, this side of the aisle would like to help get to a place where we're not hurting Minnesotans every day as we're doing right now. This bill would compensate MNsure enrollees who receive their 1095A form after the IRS deadline, the law, and I often ask the question, what happens when government breaks the law? MNsure has broken the law. What happens when government breaks the law. Well, apparently nothing, but I want to change that. Okay, this bill will compensate MNCHA enrollees who receive their 1090 Form A after the IRS deadline for those forms to be sent out. Minnesotans who are insured for 1 month or more on a private MNCHA plan are required to have their 1095A forms and able to fill out their federal income tax returns. And by the way, I can share the letter of the IRS. The IRS says don't file your taxes without the 1095A. Don't do it. So now what have we done? We have a lot of Minnesotans past the deadline, but yet the taxes are due. It says you got to pay your taxes, but you won't be able to. You'll have to have an extension. So at no fault of the citizens of this great state, at no fault of their own, they're going to have to file extensions, pay their tax liability, which they're not going to be sure if it's correct. They're not going to be sure if it's correct, because what if they, in a week or so, get something and say, well, you owe the subsidy back because your income has changed. So the 1095 form, A forms reconciles any advanced premium tax credits based on estimated income and actual year-end income. The IRS set a deadline of February 1st for exchanges to send 1095 A's to enrollees. MNCHA was not able to provide the 1095 form A's by February 1st, and we'll probably hear today, oh, we're really working on it. The system's much better. We're getting there. Just remember my mother when she said, Gregory Michael, sorry doesn't always work. We are hurting Minnesotans. And I'd like to bring up, Madam Chair, if I could, I think that this would probably go to Ways and Means, if it passes, would probably go to Ways and Means. But if my friends on the other side of the aisle, in the last committee on one of the bills, he said, well, you know, has this hit all the committees? Members, I will take this bill to every committee in this House and have it heard. I'd be happy to do that. More than happy. So if my friends over here are saying, well, it doesn't need to go to this committee, fine. I'll go to the Soybean Subcommittee. It doesn't matter. I'll go, and I'll be happy to go. The bill would compensate enrollees $10 every day for that the form was late past February 1st. If someone's 1095A does not come after April 18th tax filing day, they will be compensated $50 per day. This compensation program would run through the Department of Revenue. So, Madam Chair, I'll ask Ms. Roberts to go, if she could go through the fiscal note when at the appropriate time. MNCHA would have to reimburse the state for the cost of compensation for administering the compensation. This would come out of MNCHA's operating budget. And so, again, we put the amendment on. I was hoping that the IRS could waive penalties and fines for MNCHA's incompetence, but I'd be happy to share this letter with folks. Like I said, it says we're sorry, but we're not going to do anything tough. If we need to penalize Minnesotans because they didn't do anything wrong, we're going to do it. And I'd be happy to share that with committee members if you so desire.
Mr. Chair, we do have that in the packets for people to see.
So. Okay, very, very good. And you can see it says, I am sorry to hear your constituents are experiencing frustration. I don't know if that's the right word. I'd probably say anger, hatred, things like that. Frustration is a very kind word there. In several places, and they say, we're sorry that that MNCHA isn't working. So with that, this bill, there's so many problems with MNCHA, but this bill is focused on the issue of 1095s. By law, have to be out by January 31st. They're not out. Not all of them are out. And, yes, we're making progress, but March 30th. We're sitting here at March 30th, and not all the forms are out. This is unconscionable. We are hurting Minnesotans, and I would really appreciate the member's support. And I would maybe if we could go to the fiscal note, whatever you want, Madam Chair, it's your committee. And then I'd stand for questions, and I hope there's a lot of them.
Sure. Ms. Roberts, do you want to walk us through the fiscal note? Members, that should be in your packet.
Madam Chair and members, if you look at the first page of the fiscal note, there are the first line under MNCHA shows general fund costs of $130,000 in fiscal year 2016 and then $13.5 million in fiscal year 2017. And what these are, the first part of it is the administrative costs for the Department of Revenue. That's the $130,000 in fiscal year 2016. And then there's also $414,000 in fiscal year 2017. And those costs are explained further on page 6 of the fiscal note. The largest part of that cost is the $13 million for the compensatory payments to individuals. And then underneath that, you'll see a transfer from the MNCHA account in the Special Revenue Fund. So the bill provides the general fund is reimbursed for these expenses, so the net cost to the general fund is zero. And the $13 million just over $13 million in payments to individuals is explained in Minshew's part of the fiscal note, which starts on page 8, and then you can see really their detailed calculation, which I think they would have to explain on page 10 of the fiscal note.
Great. Members, any questions on the fiscal note at all? Is there anyone from the audience that wishes to speak to this issue?
Yes.
Welcome. Come on down. Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Diana Yelek, and my husband,
Richard Yelek.
Welcome.
We've come to speak on behalf of ourselves, but unofficially on behalf of thousands and thousands of other families that have experienced issues like we have through Minshew. Our nightmare began when we signed up for Minshew. We went through an authorized insurance agent that Minshew authorized, and they helped us set it up. We evaluated the plan that might work well for us, signed up, and thought we were good to go. But that's just the beginning of the nightmare. We tried to look for answers, but within Minshew, answers are almost impossible. And when you do get answers, they never are the same answer twice. We received our first authorization letter that we were accepted in the plan. We picked Qualified Health Care Plan, a QHP, as it's spoken through Minshew. It was going to be with subsidy based upon our income. So we got the letter saying that we were accepted and authorized. So then received a second letter a few days later saying that now we were enrolled and qualified to be enrolled in medical assistance. We didn't understand what was going on. It didn't make sense. There's no reason we should be on medical assistance. With an income of $32,000 for the year, we did not belong there. So trying to figure out what went on, what went wrong, it's got to be a mistake somewhere. We tried to ask questions, multitude of people. We spoke to Minshew staff, supervisors, specialists in their departments, medical assistance supervisors, staff, social workers, the Department of Health, social workers and caseworkers, constantly being referred and bounced back and forth everywhere. We spoke with Blue Cross, Blue Shield, which was the plan that we were supposed to be enrolled in and accepted because we qualified for it. And even to the Minshew-approved agents to try and find out, the insurance agents to try and find out if they could help us figure out what was wrong. After endless phone calls and being transferred back and forth, we were bounced through the system like a rubber ball. Many hours of research trying to resolve our problem, and we were running out of time. My husband had private insurance, which we were going to retain until we were sure we were qualified and accepted, which letters stated we were, but with the problems we figured we better hold on. So at this point, we still have our own private insurance that we've been paying for, but based on Minshew's system, we should not be having to do that. We should already be on and accepted. Medical assistant said we were accepted and enrolled effective 1 February. Then our qualified health plan said we were effective on 1 March of this year. We did not receive everything we should have from Blue Cross Blue Shield, like our ID cards and our booklets and stuff to choose our clinics. But we did receive all the information from medical assistants. Speaking with them, they said, that's the way it is. Pick your plan and be done with it, but you don't get both. But they said, but we're not sure you get medical assistance. It was just a game, back and forth. And I say that it was a game. Nobody seemed to know the rules, but we were the little pawns in the game, and we had to come up with some decision for ourselves. You guys weren't able, you guys meaning Minshew, were not able to figure out your own mistakes. This went on and on, to the point where we were so frustrated with it. No one could help us. It's costing us more. We don't get what we were supposed to get. So we enlisted our representative, Mr. Lunan. going through a lot of these things, being denied a plan, we were told it was based on income. I, this year, for 2016, will have a one-time income of $22,000. So I asked the question of Minsure, is $22,000 as an annual income, one-time income for myself, and a $10,000 income for my husband, totaling $32,000 of interest, excuse me, income, do we qualify for medical assistance? No one seems to be able to tell me that, but when I did research, we found out annual income guidelines for medical assistance is $21,186. Well, that should default me out of the system. I should not be accepted. But I was told that is where we have to be, take it or leave it. Ben was speaking to someone from the health department. Karen told me that we cannot qualify for the health plan because medical assistance has been determined our only option. We can take it or leave it. But if we choose to leave medical assistance, we give up our option to the qualified health plan and the subsidy we were entitled to have. That is not fair. First of all, if you don't know what you're doing in your own system, how can you tell me what I can and can't have when some of your rules say I am entitled to it? Through the qualified health plan, the income of $32,000 does qualify us for a qualified health plan. The biggest problem we have discovered is Minsure insists taking medical assistance is the way it should be, but the recourses coming back on that also are, as you probably are all aware, is the recourse the state has is to come back with a lien against your estate. You will then have to pay back everything that you've used through Minsure. That's not the way it should be, but medical assistance is based on monthly income, we have been told. Monthly income. I had 1 month in January of income as a one-time earning. So from February to December, they consider me having no income. So now I qualify for medical assistance, very foolishly. But on the other hand, they say $32,000 should disqualify me from medical assistance. The game continues. No real good rules. It really should be an easy fix. We've been told that the hierarchy of how they decide where you will be placed when they evaluate your income, they begin with medical assistance. If you qualify there, which they say I do because I have a one-month income throughout the whole year, then they say, that's it, process is done, you're placed in medical assistance, we won't look any farther. But they need to reverse it. It's not rocket science. It's logical. You don't take a 4-inch whole screen if you're going to shake out a bunch of rocks and sort them out, because almost all the rocks are going to fall through, so everybody's going to qualify for medical assistance. You need to take that fine screen and sort out the little pebbles of the people who really need medical assistance first. Then you know who you really have. Because right now you get a lot of these people who are in medical assistance. They don't qualify, but they know they need insurance. So they're going to say, okay, put me there. It's a shame. It's embarrassing. But I have to have insurance. They don't have a choice. Now, when you put us in that situation, it's really a shame. If we go into medical assistance, we don't belong there. We know that. Your system just hasn't got it all figured out. But it's a shame. We're stealing from our friends and neighbors because it's their tax dollar and our tax dollar that is going in to pay for medical assistance. The system should look at, if we qualify for a health plan, we're willing to pay the premiums. That's our job, to pay the premiums where we're entitled. We're not to look for freeloader handouts, but Minsure will not allow that to happen. Their system is so dysfunctional beyond all imagination. There's no reason it has to be so complicated that very few, if any, can actually understand how Minsure's system works. They can't even implement the system accurately. They do really need to clean house and get in qualified people who know how to run the system that was designed, but improve the design of the system so it can be functional. They need to have staff that is trained and properly able to do their job accurately and honestly so that they don't have a million different answers to one single question. Here's another real eye-opener. When the MNsure representatives come and talk with the authorized insurance agents to help them through the process, because they are struggling, they have more nightmares than we can even imagine, the representatives from MNsure don't really have answers to fix it. It gets to the point where the agents have asked, okay, the only way we seem to be able to get our clients the insurance that they're entitled to based on MNsure laws is to lie to the system. In our case, it would be, don't tell them I have a one-time, just put our annual income and leave it at that. But the questions direct you where things have to be answered. And to that question that was placed to that MNsure representative, do you know what the answer he gave them was? Well, that would work too. That's a disgrace. They don't know how to work anything out. We too were given that similar advice throughout the process of trying to figure out how we get it fixed. And they said, well, it's kind of too bad. You made your own mistake. Now that accusation is upon us. Now it's our fault that we got caught up in all the MNsure system and their mess. It isn't right. What I'd like to know is, if there is an income level, and from the data we have searched out, I, on my one-time earning, should have been disqualified from medical assistance. And that would have then allowed me to be in the qualified health plan we originally signed up for. Because we refuse to take it, we get nothing. The only option they did give us is we can take the qualified health plan, no subsidies, which we are entitled to. But they said, it doesn't matter. That's your problem. Don't worry about it. Move on. We got other people to talk to. If we qualify and we're willing to pay, why doesn't MNsure use that? Put people on it where they belong. It would save so much for tax dollars, and it would stop one of the biggest budget busters that we've got going right now. MNsure has put so many people on state where they don't belong. And when I say state, I mean medical assistance. We don't need to put people there. Put them in the better places. Let's use logic and really good reasoning and enroll people where they belong. There's a little scenario that I'd like to share so I can put people on the other side of the fence. You have to buy a car, which is mandated by state. So just ride along with me here a little bit. You have to give me your wallet, because I'm in charge of buying that car for you. And you have to trust me, because that's my job, and you have no voice in the matter. Would you trust me to do it? You don't really know me. You know why I'm here, but you don't really know me. But am I obligated to do the job right? We'll leave a question mark there. I did a little research, and then I bought a car for you. I spent $6,000 from your wallet, which you had to give me. However, I took an additional $4,000 out of it because I'm really not very good at spending money wisely, and I might find more expenses that I have to cover down the road because I messed up. After a considerable delay, you get your car delivered to you along with your wallet. Now, my name and my contacts were never made available to you no matter how many times you asked. You have no way to reach me. Now when you get your car, you realize that it's making some noise as you start to drive it. Something's really wrong, so now you're concerned. You drive it down the road and you see the engine is starting to smoke. The car begins to shake and rattle, and it's making extremely loud rumbling sounds. So you get out and you examine the car, you find out the exhaust system is missing. There is a set of bald tires, the engine is leaking oil. And you look under the undercarriage, it's all rusted out and being held together by duct tape. Now, my purchasing system is very dysfunctional, and it took me to the wrong car lot. Thus, you did not receive the certified used car you were entitled to and paid for. Instead, I forced you to accept the car that you didn't want. And on top of that, I overcharged you $4,000. But that's your problem. So you're frustrated and furious now? So you try to reach me to end the resolution, to get a resolution, and you keep hitting dead ends. Eventually, you do reach somebody at the top, but all you're told is, well, you know, that's your problem. Can't help you. That's our policy. Take it or leave it. So then you find out that there's a no-return policy, but we tell you, you can return your car if you want, but you don't get your money back. That's just the way it is. You tell them it's unfair, and they don't seem to care. They say, that's how the system works. We can't change it. And then they continue to say, well, do you want the car or not? Move on. Remember now, you're out $10,000, and you don't have a good car that works, and there's no accountability. So have you reached a frustration level higher yet? How would you deal with the incompetence and the lack of knowledgeable staff? You wouldn't you want answers, and wouldn't you want what you were entitled to? Don't you feel cheated that what should be yours by mandated guidelines have now fallen into the loopholes and the cracks just because the system failed and no one's willing or knowledgeable to fix it? Time is running out for you to resolve this issue because you are mandated by state rules to get a car that runs. How would you react? You have no voice on how your money is wastefully spent, and you still have no car. How would you react? This kind of gives you a little scenario of the nightmare we've been trying to resolve. And hopefully you can understand our dilemma a little bit better. Things need to be dealt with. You owe it to us as the taxpayers to fix these problems and to spend our money wisely. Maybe you think my words representing us and many other Americans, Minnesotans, maybe you think they're harsh, but our voices need to be heard and our problems need to be resolved. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mrs. Yellick. I don't know if Chair Davids wants to comment or any members have any questions for the testifiers. Representative Lunan.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for coming today.
You're welcome.
To the rain and everything. The about how much time do you think you have into this whole process?
As of today, closer to 60 or 70 hours, just of what I can recall on documenting and calls, but many other hours talking to people, dealing with it. It's a shame.
Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I hope that Chair Davids wrote down the term duct tape. It fixes everything else. It might be a possible solution for the Minsure problem as well. Seems like they've tried everything else.
Members, any other questions for these testifiers? Representative Howell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I really don't have a question for you. I guess I got a comment for you because I've got a constituent that has gone through the same problem you have. They got put on MA, don't belong on MA, and they took it because they were convinced that that was their only option. Mm-hmm. And now they're caught in a web that they can't get out of. And so I understand your frustrations because I've heard it firsthand from constituents of mine. So this isn't an isolated case by any stretch of the imagination. I'm sure there's other folks that are struggling out there that mm-hmm. their stories just haven't been heard. I thank you for coming here.
That's it. And
Mrs. Yellick,
we chose not to take medical assistance for several reasons, but the biggest one is dignity and respect for ourselves. It's not where we belong, and we refuse to go along with the system just because somebody says that's the way it has to be when they're so dysfunctional and so disrespectful mm-hmm. to people by forcing it down their throats.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for sharing your story, and I apologize that you've had to deal with this. Did you contemplate going off of the Minsure exchange to get coverage so you wouldn't have to deal with these issues?
Yes, we did. We started off looking that this was probably a good option, an affordable option for us, and it sounded like everything was going to be just fine. But with all the nightmares, no, we decided this was not the place to be. That's why we held on to our insurance, not knowing exactly where it was going to go. But the farther we got into everything, the farther we could see the absolute disgrace of everything in this whole system, that if this is how dysfunctional it was now, how was it going to be as we got into the program? So it wasn't even going to be an answer. It's more being here to fight that it gets fixed, because there are many people who probably can't handle outside insurance. We can do it staying on the private insurance at the time, but we're going to have to look for some other options. It isn't what we should have to spend, but we're not going to live in their nightmare anymore.
Representative Schultz.
Madam Chair, so you're saying you have a policy that's not offered on the exchange. You're off the exchange?
Correct.
So you haven't enrolled in a policy. So,
correct.
I think eligibility is determined by DHS. So you said that you guys were told you qualified for medical assistance. And it is a complicated process to find out eligibility for certain programs.
Mm-hmm.
And we put together a healthcare finance task force last August that met every 2 weeks or so, and we came out with a report and 33 recommendations to try to fix our MA MinSure programs and eligibility and offering continuous coverage and making it easier to mm-hmm. identify eligibility and enrollment. And we have offered many bills this session, and none of them are being heard in committees, unfortunately, and to try to resolve these issues. And the other thing is, today we're hearing a bill about these 1095 forms. Mm-hmm. So since you didn't enroll in coverage, you were not going to get a 1095 form from MinSure. And I think that's the bill we're hearing today. So it sounds like you don't really, that's not going to be a problem for you because you didn't enroll in MinSure. And I also want to say one more, just a comment, that a lot of people have benefited from this program and expanding eligibility and getting subsidies. And it is unfortunate that the 1095 forms didn't go out early. And I'm glad you didn't have that problem. Did you receive a 1095 form from another entity, from your other health plan?
Yes.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
In a very reasonable time.
Mm-hmm.
Chair Davids.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair. And Representative Schultz brings up the point that there was a report to try and fix everything. And I think maybe one of the reasons those bills haven't been heard, because many of the issues are spend more money, spend more money, spend more money, which we're not going to do. As Chair of the Legislative Oversight Committee on MinSure, we had that report presented to us. And I asked the question, what if just hypothetically none of those issues passed? Where would you be? Boy, there's silence in that room at that point. Because those things won't be passed. We have spent over $300 million. Over $300 million. When do we stop the bleeding? Duct tape won't even take care of that, Representative Lunan. When do we stop the bleeding? MinSure has failed. Now, many times in my life, I failed. And you learn from your failures, and you pick up and you move on. You know, it's kind of like selling hogs. If you're losing 10 cents per pound, you don't raise more hogs. You don't raise more hogs. That's what those recommendations were to do. That some professor from the University of Minnesota, very nice lady, presented her findings. And the answer from my good friends on the other side of the aisle is spend more money. Increase the tax. Put the tax on all plans, even when they're not on the exchange. That's not going to happen. So we need to work together to try and find solutions. The solutions from that committee were garbage. They were worthless. And to say many people have benefited from insurance, okay, some folks might have insurance now with a $10,400 deductible. They have health insurance, but they don't get health care. And, of course, I've been here since before most of you were born. And I have never had so many complaints and spent, well, maybe not Representative Carlson, but I have never in my life had so many complaints as I have had with MinSure. And right now it's the 1095As. And I'm going to give credit to someone in MinSure right now for doing a pretty good job, and that's Mr. Schmidt. Because I have told the insurance agents in my district, I said, if MinSure's screwing with you, and let me use a swear, Madam Chair, but if MinSure's screwing with you, call me. So all the insurance agents in the district I'm so fortunate to represent, call me. And I get a lot of calls because they mess up a lot. And to Mr. Schmidt's credit, when I forward the information on to him, he will take care of it. So I would recommend that every member around this table tell their insurance agents that have gone through pure hell. You know, I'm not the brightest bulb on the tree, but when I read this bill, you go back and listen to my speeches of 4 years ago. Everything, and I was negative Nelly, everything I said is coming true. Everything I said is coming true. I was so hoping 4 years ago I was wrong. But people say, well, how did you know that? I said, well, I can read. I actually read the bills. And time after time, I was an original author of the MnSure bill. I was an original author. I thought, you know, I'd rather have them calling 651 numbers than 202 numbers. Let's do it locally. How many times in the legislature do we see where we want to take a state program and send it back to the feds? I've never seen that before. We always want federal programs because we can run them better at the state. This is the exception. So to say people have benefited, well, they might have an insurance plan with a $10,400 deductible, and they haven't had to use it, so they're fine. I do legislative surveys. One of my questions is, what should we do with MnSure? You know, can we fix it? Should we repeal it? Should we make some modifications? Whatever. And the people that say, leave it alone, I put on there, leave it alone, question C, or answer C. Leave it alone, it's working fine. And I get those. Some people say that. Leave it alone, it's working fine. People have benefited from it. Those are people that are state employees, federal employees. People have good health care coverage through Mother Mayo in Rochester, and they don't see the problems. Yeah, so, but to say somebody's benefited from tripling your deductible and tripling your premium, you know, are my friends on this side of the aisle still defending and supporting MnSure? I'd like to know that. Are you still defending MnSure, spending $300 million and having nothing to show for it except Excel spreadsheets being sent to the carriers that are incorrect? So these folks have been through and put in situations they shouldn't have been through. They have nothing to do with this bill. But I'm so glad that you came today to testify, because I have other bills here, and I'm going to get your name and number. I might need you in on some of these other bills. But, Mr. Schmidt, thank you for helping some of the folks that have been hurt by this. But it shouldn't have to be that way. We have 5.5 million people in this state, and I get calls one by one by one, and I ask Mr. Schmidt to fix them, and he does. Is that the way this is supposed to operate? 5.5 million people in the state, and we got to go one by one on 1095s? $300 million for IT systems that don't work? And I've had it sitting before the Legislative Oversight Committee on MnSure saying it's getting better. It'll be done by February 1st. It'll be done by March 1st. It'll be done by April 1st. It'll be done by I don't believe them. And the 1095s, by law, were to be out by February 1st, by law, and they're not out yet. Oh, some of them are, and we're working on it. We're putting a whole lot of people on. Why weren't they doing this, getting this ready in November and December of 15? This has been a colossal failure, and I think Minnesotans, with my bill, to get back to my bill here for a second, Minnesotans should be compensated for MnSure's incompetence. And we now know from the IRS they're not going to help. They just say, we're sorry, go figure it out yourself, pay the penalties, tough. That's what this letter says. So, members, I support your bill, and if you want to go to the Soybean Subcommittee, I'll be happy to take this anywhere, any amendments, anytime you want to talk about this debacle, I'm happy to visit.
Okay. We're going to go to Representative Schultz and then Representative Nash, and then we're going to, we have the folks from MnSure here, and we will ask them to come forward, too. Representative Schultz.
So I'll answer some of your questions, Representative Davids, but the task force did evaluate whether or not we should go to the federal exchange. And independent analysis concluded that it would be much more expensive if we did that, if we made that move. So, you know, let's talk offline and see what we can do to help resolve some of the issues and get them fixed in a timely manner. I'm going to talk about your bill that's in front of us today and just ask a couple questions. So do private employers have to send out 1095 forms, Representative Davids?
Chair Davids.
I would let staff, so we get the answer perfectly correctly,
We can get back to you on that.
I believe they do. So why not find, we should have look at ask our Department of Treasury to possibly look at other employers that may have gotten the 1095 forms out late. And I know they have been not all sent timely, because that's what I'm hearing from my constituents as well. So it's not just Minster, it's other employers that aren't getting them out on time as well. And I think we should, you know, be responsible for all of our constituents and maybe find employers as well.
Chair Davis.
Well, thank you. And my mother, God rest her soul, also said that if your brother did something wrong, doesn't mean you get to do it wrong, too. But I'd be happy to put an amendment on this bill that says, yeah, private employers are going to get fined if they're late, too. And actually, they do get fined. They do get fined. I have no problem with that. I'd also mention that Maryland, Oregon, and Hawaii have all gone to the Federal Exchange. These are not exactly your bastions of conservatism. They saw that the state exchange didn't work in their states, and they did something about it. Now, it would be more expensive in the short term, much cheaper in the long run. It would be a little bit higher right now, and the reason is because we have this thing called MinCare. One other state in the nation has that type of program. So the question is, what will the legislature do to make sure that those folks that are on MinCare have continuous coverage? That's a very important issue. But that can be worked around. Would you rather spend $11 million extra now, or continue to spend $300 million and throw it down the rat hole? That's the question.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think I have some information that'll help clear it up. It's actually for the private employers. There are 1095B and a 1095C forms that they're using, and you are not required to have those forms in order to file your income taxes. So you're kind of confusing the issue. It's the 1095A that comes through the MNSURE program. That's the forms that people need, and that is what's coming from the state, and that's why Chair Davids has the bill today. So if some constituent has getting their forms late that are 1095Bs and Cs, you can confidently tell them that they can still do their income taxes because it wouldn't have an impact on that.
So are only the 1095As coming from an exchange? None are coming from employers?
Correct.
Thank you.
But Madam Chair and Representative Schultz, I'll be happy to go after employees for not filing 1095As.
Sure.
Plus, I'd also, Madam Chair, if I could for just a second. I want to be very clear on something. The Department of Revenue gets brought up on some of this stuff. They're not the problem here. They're going to be asked to administer some things. The Department of Revenue has been very professional and worked very, very well. I want to make sure that's clear. It's not the Department of Revenue that's the problem here.
Okay, and I've got Representative Nash, and then I'd ask that the MNSURE folks come forward. So, Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and would love to have the MNSURE folks come up because I've
you
got questions of them. Well, I have a couple questions.
Okay.
To quote Representative Garofalo, I have a nauseatingly long list of questions. But here's my first question, Representative Davids. Thanks for the bill. Operationally, what happened? I mean, this is a pretty. I like to figure out why something broke, and how do we fix it? Because my question is, I've got farmers in my district like you do, and what's going to happen to them? Because what are the ramifications to the farmers who cannot file their taxes? I'm just curious. What am I supposed to tell them?
Chair Davids.
Pray would be probably the best thing. The second thing I'd say is they need to apply for an extension. So we're putting them out on the limb because now they have to file an extension. That'll work for 6 months. They have to file an extension. That's the first thing. But yet they still have to pay their taxes in this year by April 18th. Normally it's April 15th, by April 18th. So they're still going to have to pay their tax liability. But until they get their form 1095A, do we know what their tax liability is? So they're going to get fined. At no fault of their own, because of MNSURE's incompetence, they're going to get fined. And they did nothing wrong. And that's not right.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Davids. That's what I'm getting from the farmers in my district. They have lit my phone up, and they are angry because, you know, right now they have a time where they're still waiting to be able to get in the fields, and they're waiting to do things like this. This is the time of the year that they handle all that. They can't, and they're frustrated. And, you know, telling them to pray, much like that we tell them to pray for rain or less rain or whatever, that doesn't help them. They want to know why this broke. So, Madam Chair, I do have other questions for the MNSURE people, and we can go to other member questions for the testifiers, but I do have a lot of other questions because I want to be able to go back to my district. I want to be able to answer the emails and answer the phone calls and tell them, well, here's what happened and here's what's going to get fixed. So.
Okay. I think at this point we're going to have, thank you, Mr. and Mrs. Yellick. I appreciate you coming forward. I hope that you can stick around just in case if members have questions later on for a little bit.
Yes, I apologize.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for hearing us.
Yes, and thanks. We are going to ask Ms. O'Toole if you would come forward, and then...
jump into my questions.
If you guys can come over, and Mr. Peterson, if you can come forward to the committee testifier table. Welcome to the committee. If you can state your name for the record and who you represent, that would be helpful. I think we would just like to have a little bit of an update of where we're at right now. So if you could, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Allison O'Toole. I'm the CEO of Minsure.
Madam Chair, my name is Scott Peterson. I work for Minute Services and the CIO for DHS and Minsure.
Ms. O'Toole?
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I appreciate being invited here today. And as members are likely well aware, the top priority at Minsure right now is completing and mailing the Form 1095-A's so that Minnesotans can file their taxes. I come today with an update on our progress. As of this morning, 93% of 1095-A forms have been mailed. The small remainder will be sent by the end of the week. This is news that I would have liked to share 2 months ago, but nevertheless, these forms are out, and for the small number of Minnesotans who have been waiting, they can now complete their federal tax return. Today's news is the result of a multifaceted contingency plan that was implemented at Minsure and Minute in order to expedite the sending of these forms. When it became clear that the process in place would not deliver based on our projected timeline, we took immediate action to train additional staff and develop new ways of completing this project. Even though all 1095-A forms are now on track to be mailed, that doesn't change the fact that the time it took to complete this project can be described in one word: unacceptable. Everyone at Minsure and Minute recognizes that this effort did not go as planned. To put it frankly, we did not live up to the expectations of Minnesotans, and we caused undue stress and frustration. For that, we apologize. Even though we are late in sending these forms out, we did strive to make them as accurate as possible so that Minnesotans can quickly file their taxes as soon as they receive their form. To date, less than 1% of the 1095-A forms have needed to be corrected due to inaccuracies. This is an extremely low error rate and something that we feel will benefit Minnesotans. In the 2 years I've been at Minsure, I've worked to make it one of the most transparent and accountable organizations in state government. We've been open about our progress on this project from the beginning and recognize there are improvements we need to make to make sure this doesn't happen again. That's why Minsure and Minute are initiating an evaluation of the 1095-A business process to see what worked and what didn't so we can fix it. Clearly, there are improvements to be made, and some of those have already occurred. Personnel changes to staff on the project team have taken place, and we continue to monitor and identify ways we can become more efficient. Every organization, regardless of how long they've been around, runs into challenges and has an opportunity to learn from those challenges, and that's what we're doing here. I'm happy to be joined by my colleague Scott Peterson from Minute, who can go into further detail about some of the challenges we faced with this project and what we've learned moving forward. Believe me when I say that my number one priority is always providing what's best for Minnesotans. We clearly didn't do that here, but we have learned and will make improvements moving forward, and I'm confident about that because it's already underway. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer questions with Mr. Peterson.
Ms. O'Toole, I just have a couple questions I just want to ask right off the bat just to kind of better have a better understanding. So when you say that less than 1% had to be corrected, what percentage of the 1095s were sent here in the month of March?
Well, now, you know, it's March 30th, so we are at 93%. I'll have to get the exact number that was sent in March, though. We can get that for you quickly.
I think by my figures, it's probably about 40%.
Okay.
So I'm guessing that 1% number of incorrect forms might change, or can you enlighten me a little bit on that?
Madam Chair, yes, I can try. You know, we have just a rolling... we have calls on these all the time, and so I would assume that that's fairly accurate. I will keep the committee apprised if that increases, though we've been transparent about this the entire way, and I'm happy to continue that. But that has been sort of our standing error rate through the month.
I think what would be helpful for me, Ms. O'Toole, is as of April 30th, if we're looking a month from now, I think it would be helpful to know kind of what that rate is at that point. By that time, people will have filed, hopefully have filed their taxes, and we'll have a better understanding of what that component is and what we need to have. I'd also like you, too, to kind of back up a little bit and tell us a little bit more about your planning process. So I'm assuming that you started maybe last summer or even last fall. Walk me through when you were anticipating having to put the 1095 forms in place. This is something you had to do the last time around, too. Why is this year different than it was last year?
I'm happy to, and I actually will turn to Mr. Peterson for a minute to assist on that question. I'm happy to fill in.
Mr. Peterson, welcome.
Madam Chair, the key differences this year, as you stated earlier in the hearing, is the requirement this year from the federal government to have the 1095A form. And there's also different processes on the back end that were required. So from a MNSHR perspective, all carrier data had to be effectuated within, or they had to be determined paid from the carriers back to the MNSHR system. And part of the thing that we haven't had an opportunity to talk at this committee, we've met with Representative Davids and the Oversight Committee several times talking about the path forward and the transition and what was happening with the carrier implementation and the integration in general. And we've been very transparent about the struggles we've had with that integration. The effort started last March, essentially, to work, but there's multiple facets of this behind the carrier integration that include both a reconciliation effort, a true-up effort, as well as just the integration itself between the carriers. And the way this should work is that when an enrollment happens on MNSHR, an 834 should be generated, an EDI transaction, that's sent to the carriers in an automated fashion. The carriers then enroll the individual, and when they receive payment, they send a transaction back to MNSHR showing it's effectuated. All changes during the year then are entered through MNSHR, whether they're life events or adding a household member or changing plans and that type of activity. Because that work wasn't completed, we ended up in a position where we had to accept data from the carriers, attempt to match that data within the MNSHR system to validate that the records were correct, and then go through a process of determining the matches and delivering 1095s based on that. Because of the changes throughout the year, that's where the complexity comes in. So the first, I think there was 20% or 8,000 forms were mailed before the deadline, and those were kind of the less complex cases where there were easily matched within the carrier data and could go out quickly. Then as the changes and the complexity of the cases gets increased, additional work had to be done to create matches to identify who they were within the carrier data and the MNSHR data.
Well, Mr. Peterson, when you realized that you weren't going to make the goal of February 1st, what was Plan B?
So there were, Madam Chair, there were several contingency options that were put in place, both just a manual generation option as well as additional tools that were developed on the minute side to be able to implement a separate process outside of the existing one to make sure we could capture the most complex cases.
And Mr. Peterson, what was that contingency? How many people did you bring on board, and at what point?
So from a minute perspective, I don't have exact staff numbers that were on board, but because we're dealing with data issues, it was more about delivering tools to the business to allow them to make the data changes to allow 1095s to go out.
So how many staff do you have on this? I mean, what?
Madam Chair, I'll have to tell you, I'll have to get back to you on this staff complement. I'd say there's probably a minimum of 30 to 40 staff working on this from the IT perspective, but that's the overarching carrier implementation, which includes effectuation, reconciliation, as well as just the transfer of the data back and forth between the carriers.
And Mr. Peterson, what percentage of your staff then does that take up? How much of the minute budget is consumed by the MNsure?
Just from a minute perspective, and this is the staff complement that we have on MNsure with contractors as well as minute staff is close to 200 staff.
All right. I don't know if Chair Davids wants, I otherwise have members that have questions. Representative Mark Anderson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I actually had a question for the Yelex, but as long as MNsure is up here. A couple comments and then I've got a question at the end. If MNsure was an airline, we'd be calling this Smoke and Hole Airlines. This has been a disaster since day one. I did not vote for it. The writing was on the wall before this even started. I agree with Chair Davids on that whole perspective. But, you know, we keep hearing about this word transparency. We keep tossing this around. Somewhere on the inside, and I don't know if it's Minute or if it's MNsure, somebody was assigned this task, and I know it wasn't the CEO. Was assigned this task to get these out. Is there a person that actually was assigned, one person, to oversee getting all of these forms out to people?
Ms. O'Toole or Mr. Peterson?
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, there are a team of people who work on these. I think, the buck always stops with me, and I think with Mr. Peterson on his end.
Representative Anderson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. In private business, somebody is held accountable. And somebody, something this large is canned, let go, goodbye, for failure. We never see this in government, ever. I have not heard anything. All I've heard is, we're sorry, but as I've taught my daughter when growing up, sorry is only a one-sided conversation. If you don't ask for forgiveness, it becomes that one-sided conversation. Who cares? Oh, I'm sorry, and then you can turn around and walk away. La-di-da, it doesn't cancer, it doesn't cure anything. I want to know what's going to happen. I understand Greg, the chairman's position on this, and he's absolutely right to be going getting some sort of compensation from the people. But so far, everything I've heard from MNsure of all of these problems has been the same old excuse, and no heads have rolled yet. I'd like to know what your course of action is.
Ms. O'Toole, I'm guessing I'd like to know kind of what your position too is on Chair David's bill. Maybe you can offer some input on that too.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Anderson. I'll answer Representative Anderson's question first. Obviously we are, I mentioned in my update that we are going to undertake an evaluation of this, find out what went wrong and what we need to do to fix it. I think everything's on the table in that regard. I mentioned also that there have already been personnel changes on the team, and as we go through this evaluation, there may be more, I don't know. And I don't want to project on an outcome before I have all the facts in front of me. In terms of, Madam Chair, your question about our position on the bill, you know, our board has not taken a formal position on this bill. We are here to provide the committee an update and any information you need in making this bill. I think, you know, the ultimate result is that it would do significant, it'd be a significant revenue cut to us. you know, I defer to Representative Davids in his goal with this legislation, but our board has not taken a formal position yet.
Chair Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Minsure would be supporting this bill wholeheartedly because they're transparent. Everything is going to be fixed. This bill won't affect them. So they should just have that as a safeguard. The people of Minnesota should know that they're going to be protected. Everything's going to be fine in 2016. So when Ms. O'Toole said it'd be a significant revenue cut, what does that tell you? That tells you we're going to have another year. We're going to be sitting here a year from now having the same problems. If they do their job and reach their benchmarks, nothing happens. There is no cost. But they're projecting a cost in here because maybe not everything is going to go right. We just heard that everything's fine, or going to be fine. Everything's going to be wonderful. Why would anybody oppose something that holds, that has them accountable? It says in this letter dated today, Minsure and MinIT, Minute, take full responsibility for not achieving Minnesota's expectations. They broke the law. Taking full responsibility for breaking the law, I'm confused. But as far as the bill here itself, I don't know why any, this should be bipartisan. I don't know why anybody would even think of opposing this, because everything's going to be fine is what we're hearing. And we hear that all the time, and then it never is. But everything's going to be fine. This bill costs nothing. There's no significant revenue cut because they're going to get the job done. Or are they?
Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The ultimate responsibility with this falls with leadership, and I have a question of with the 1095 problem. When was Governor Dayton made aware that this was going to be an issue?
Ms. O'Toole.
Madam Chair and Representative Lunan, I don't have an exact date, but and I don't know that Mr. Peterson does either, but we have been in contact with all of our partners. So I don't have an exact date.
Representative,
I don't know.
Before the first of the year or after the first of the year?
Ms. O'Toole.
Madam Chair and Representative, I apologize. I don't know the answer to that question. I don't have that at my fingertips.
Representative Luna?
Well, then could you answer for me, what is the chain of communication between Minsure and the governor's office then?
Ms. O'Toole.
Madam Chair and Representative, I do have regular conversations with them, but I do report to our board, Board Chair Peter Benner and I. He is my supervisor. I can't speak on behalf of our partner agency.
Representative Luna.
To another note, still on this bill, there was comments made about that you work with contractors, and obviously historically there have been work that was paid for that was not either performed or performed correctly. What has the clawback been regarding the revenue paid to those contractors when the job was not performed?
Mr. Peterson or Ms. O'Toole?
Madam Chair and Representative, I don't know exactly what contractors you're referring to. I mean that very respectfully. I'm happy to have a conversation with you offline. We have a number of contracts, and we can sit down for a more in-depth conversation about that if you'd like.
Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Minutes involvement wasn't at day one, correct?
Madam Chair, Representative, that's correct.
Yeah, so I'm talking about the contractors along the line that were brought in, were paid to get this set up. I'm assuming we're given a certain flag in the sand or an objective. That's how any entity would do a project like this. And we're told that it would be done. I'm assuming that would be the requisite for the bid or the RFP or however you did it. And then when that was not performed, typically the contract was breached and there would be money returned. I mean, it's kind of a, seems to me actually a pretty straightforward, simple situation.
Well, Mr. Peterson, if I heard you correctly earlier, you had mentioned that you had some of the people involved or contract workers. So if you could speak to that.
Madam Chair, Representative, there was I don't know the details of these settlement agreements that were created, but as the contractors were shifted and changed over the course of the last 3 years. There were settlement agreements created with those that included clawback provisions. I don't have the exact numbers of that off the top of my head. And I want to correct something. Minute was engaged initially in an infrastructure perspective. Mm-hmm. We provided the back-end infrastructure for the solution and provided advice. We weren't responsible for the contracts at that time.
Representative Lauren?
Last question. For the both testifiers, do you consider the problem fixed?
Ms. LaTool.
Madam Chair and Representative Lunin, so I'll answer in a couple phases and ask Mr. Peterson to assist too. I have been focused on getting forms out to Minnesotans, so that is our first issue. We are 93% complete. We will be entirely complete by the end of the week. So that is my first in terms of fixing the issue of getting forms to Minnesotans, that will be fixed. I think I will defer to Mr. Peterson on the technology part of that question.
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Lunin, the answer is no. Until we get the complete effectuation process in place with the carriers, which is scheduled to be done this year now in the roadmap, it won't be fixed. I mean, the processes on the back end to create and generate the 1095s have been created. They worked. We did the first approximately 30,000 with that process. We know that they generate and work correctly. But until we get that transfer in place between us and the carriers and have the complete effectuation process working, it's not complete.
Representative Rumbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just to follow on Representative Lunin's question, then when did the board become aware that there were going to be problems with meeting the deadline and just a huge log jam when it came to serving the consumers?
Ms. O'Toole.
Madam Chair and Representative Rumbeck, I do not have an exact date, but I am in touch with the board. We update the board frequently, so I don't have an exact date at my fingertips.
Well, ballpark figure. What month?
In January, I'm guessing. But I would welcome an opportunity to check on that.
Representative Rumbeck.
And Madam Chair, I guess where I don't really know the relationship between the board and your operation. I mean, I think it's fairly, long distance, isn't it? I mean, how involved are they in the daily processes, the daily problems, are they of any help at this point?
Ms. O'Toole.
Madam Chair and Representative, they act as most boards do. They are they set our strategic direction and are not in the weeds with us on day-to-day operations, although I do update our board chair frequently with the status of things, including this.
Representative Run.
Ms. O'Toole. Thank you, Madam Chair. We're beginning to hear that there are budget implications along the way. Trying to serve the customer now is kind of a multifaceted issue too. They've been wronged. They've been harmed. We're talking about the liens as well. The undisclosed, forcing of folks into medical assistance when they don't want to be. And so those folks, too, are going to be demanding some compensation. And so just can you comment on sort of the budget implications of all of this as this is coming through? What kind of unanticipated costs are you looking at?
Ms. O'Toole.
Madam Chair and Representative Rumbeck, I am... my comments on the fiscal note were, we were requested to give information to fill a fiscal note. When we get all these forms out, we'll have, a better idea of the cost. But I anticipate, because we have 93% of the forms out right now, that we will not have a big impact to our budget about this. As to the liens and other things, that is something that the Department of Human Services has is responsible for, that law has been in place since 1967, I think, and is not new just because MNsure is around or the ACA is around. So I don't know. That budget question would be better directed to the Department of Human Services. I don't know that amount.
Representative Rembeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just I just want to thank the Yeliches, I believe their name is, for testifying and for naming, you know, the problem. You know, it's being forced onto welfare. And really what MNsure has done, of course, is to create a bigger, more powerful state government. And that makes people more dependent. And it's creating dependency. And folks are now fighting, you know, what government is trying to force them into. So you made a very great point, and I just want to thank you so much for that.
And Ms. O'Toole, I'd be interested, too, in getting that exact date of when the MNsure board was notified of this being a problem. If you could send that, please. Chair Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to correct the record. I want to note for the record I am not apologizing. But as far as not costing anything, there is a one-time cost. It would hit their budget one time, but in the future, since everything's fine now, there shouldn't be any cost beyond that. I believe that's an accurate statement. I would also, a couple other things. I commend Governor Dayton. You heard it here first. He came out last week and apologized to the citizens of the state of Minnesota for the 1095A debacle specifically. This has risen to the level of governor. And I commend him for calling it what it is. It's failed. It didn't work. So, Governor Dayton, thank you. We need some leadership to fix it. And I'm more than happy to work with you on that. On the lien thing, MNsure can't be totally off the picture here. Yes, it is a department or HHS or whoever. But MNsure is getting them on the wrong plans. They wouldn't be having this problem if they weren't on the wrong plans. And let's just do some numbers quickly. Originally, we were promised 500,000. Jonathan Gruber, the genius from MIT, said there'd be 500,000 people on here. We have about 83,000 now, effectuated maybe 70,000, right in that ballpark. So, you know, they say 93% success after they've broken the law since February 1st. That means about 70,000 times 7% is 4,900 Minnesotans still aren't sleeping at night, still can't do their taxes because the MNsure is incompetent. So about 4,900 people is what we're talking about here. That matters. 4,900 people matter. And so I just want to make the point, though, that I do thank Governor Dayton for that this issue has risen to his level. I mean, he's the chief executive of this great state. And he has seen the error of MNsure's ways, and I'll be more than happy to work with the governor, Chair Anderson, to see what we can do.
Thank you, Chair Davids. I just want to offer this information, too. We're still making sure that we've got to verify it for sure, but as we're reading the law, if an employer, private employer, submits their 1095B and C's, if they miss the deadline of March 31st, they pay a fine of $100 to $250 per late form or incorrect form. So just to kind of give you a perspective on the piece of legislation that we're doing here today, we have a Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, just a few questions. I think they'll all be fairly brief, whoever at the table would like to respond, but my first question, Representative Davids made the comment as to why you didn't start earlier in November, December. I'd like a response to that. What prevented you from an earlier start? That's the question, whichever one of you wants to take it,
Ms.
Madam
Liffle.
Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Carlson. I think I will... I'll ask Scott Peterson to answer this for you.
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative, the November was to get this the entire process in place, so the carrier data and the submission to the carriers and the effectuation back. So the focus of the work effort was on that at the time, and the expectation that would be completed toward the end or before open enrollment. And as that stretched out into December, we focused on that, continued to work on that with the carriers, and frankly didn't drop to the other process until probably too late. Not probably, it was too late.
Representative Carlson.
Okay, well, that somewhat clarifies your reasoning for it. you know, in the legislature, we have a tendency to personalize some things, and I start up my taxes before the end of the year, putting everything together. But that's just my nature, because normally we're in the legislative session, so I want to get things done, but I realize that there's a deadline that comes up, and so I try to get an early start, and that's why I proceed what followed up what Representative David's commented about. My next question is, the National Exchange, have they had problems getting the form out?
Mr. Peterson or Ms. O'Toole?
Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, I will have Scott Peterson answer this too. I know last year I mentioned, you know, our correction rate right now is at 1%, and we will update the committee as requested, you know, at the end of April, so we get an accurate picture of that if it evolves. Last year we were at a 3% correction rate, which was far lower than the federal exchange at the time, and I know this year they are having some issues as well.
Well, Madam Chair, what I was asking was not
Carlson.
The correction rate was getting the forms up, the 1095-E. Were they meeting their deadlines if you were if a state participating in the National Exchange? I'm just trying to get a feel for whether Minnesota is particularly unique in that situation, or if other states who chose the other avenue, the National Exchange, were also experiencing problems.
Ms. O'Toole.
Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, I'll ask Scott Peterson for help on this. My point in the correction, just so sometimes I jump ahead of myself here, but my point in the correction was that it is really important for consumers to get accurate information. So we could have months ago sent out 100% of the forms, but that is not responsible. And if consumers have, I think sending out inaccurate forms only leads to further frustration. But maybe, Mr. Peterson, you can help answer.
Madam Chair, that's still not answering the question I'm posing. We're talking here today about, for whatever reasons, you weren't able to get the 1095s out by February 1st. And my question is, did any other states who participated in the other avenue, namely the National Exchange, experience a problem where the 1095s didn't go out?
Mr. Peterson, do you understand the question? So if
yes.
The feds, anybody that was on the federal exchange, did they experience late 1095 forms being submitted to them from the federal exchange?
Madam Chair, Representative, there hasn't been a lot of publicity on this. We do know that they sent incorrect forms out. They've posted on their website that a batch, and they don't claim to know what the batch is, went out with the wrong information, and they would have to wait for a correction to file their taxes. There's also information on their website about if you didn't receive a form. So the assumption is there is some population from the federal exchange that didn't receive a form, and what they should do to rectify the situation.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, I understand what you're saying about accuracy and the low error rate, but the forms generally going out, apparently you don't really know if other states had the same problem in getting the 1095s out for whatever reason. Okay, I'll jump to another question then. Maybe we can get more information on that one. I just was trying to get the big picture. Because we made the decision to establish our own exchange. And this one is kind of, maybe you don't know the answer to it either, but I'm sitting here thinking, you know, most, when we're dealing with various tax deductions and so on, that's basically, Madam Chair, self-reporting. And I assume that the 1095 is there so we reduce the amount of fraud, perhaps. You know, we kind of check on things through the auditing process. Not every taxpayer is audited, but there's selective auditing and so on. It seems like, you know, when I got my 1095 form the other day, late, but the other day I've got it, it was just appeared to be a relatively simple form. It just checked that I'd had health insurance each and every month. Before today's hearing, because I was waiting to give that to my CPA, so my taxes could be completed, even though I was ready, like I said, as soon as I got my W-2s and so on. But my deductions I had all organized. I'm kind of curious as to why that couldn't be in the category of self-reporting. Yes, I had health insurance 6 months, 12 months, you know, whatever, on your tax form. Now, that's a federal question, but I'm just basically asking why the 1095A. Is it to reduce fraud? Is that what the fear was? There would be potential for other frauds, you know, where taxpayers, unfortunately, we would like to think every single taxpayer appropriately does their taxes, but we know a few don't, and we pick those up usually with an audit.
Madam Chair, Representative, a couple of things. The 1095 B and C, which have been discussed here earlier, have exactly what you stated, which is a checkbox in each month that you had coverage, and essentially an attestation on the tax form to fill that out. The 1095 A is different in terms of it actually shows the tax credit amount that was awarded. It also shows information around plan ID and the specific second lowest cost silver plan associated to that client. So there's additional information that they need to be able to fill it out. Now, in coordination with that, then there's a back end process. When we generate the 1095 forms, we also have to generate a file, a monthly file that goes to the federal government. So they have what went out from the exchange and then what we also send them, so they match that up when these individuals do through audits, I'm assuming. Just one more point of clarification on the generation of the forms. We actually generated the forms very early, and the forms were generated, but sending them out was determined it would cause the taxpayers harm, as they would have to reapply or go through and get an extension to do their taxes anyway and refiling. So just wanted to make the distinction that it wasn't the generating the form problem, it was the issue related to the data and the carrier integration piece.
Chair Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm sorry.
No, if you want on that question, okay. Madam Chair.
Thank you, and Chair Carlson brings up some very, very good points, although maybe staff could help us out on this. You mentioned that the state was late in getting their 1095s out. I don't think they were. We got them before March 31st. I think that was the deadline. Could we just clarify that? I don't think the state was wrong on that. Because, see, we're different. We don't have to suffer through MnSure. We didn't go on that plan because we knew better. Mr. Shepard, maybe?
Mr. Shepard.
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, as has been mentioned here, there's the form that we all got from by being covered through the state insurance is a 1095C, and so those are different forms than the 1095A that your bill covers. The 1095A form, which I'll show you in a minute, I have one here. That's something that's filed by the health, an exchange, not by the individual employers like the 1095C that we got. And the 1095A is used to calculate the premium tax credit on a separate federal form, which I can also show you, and you need the information from the 1095A to calculate your credit. That isn't true on the 1095C that we all receive from the state of Minnesota.
Well, Chair Davids.
Madam Chair, and I know Chair Carlson still has the form, but Mr. Shepard, the state wasn't late on the 1095Cs, were they?
Mr. Shepard.
Madam Chair, I don't know the date. I don't know the deadline for the state offhand, so I'd have to yield to someone else.
And then, members, very, very quickly here, I hope you're listening very closely, because one of the excuses for breaking the law was that we wanted things to be accurate. Well, shouldn't they obey the law and have accurate information before January 31st? I was stunned. What kind of excuse is that? We had to wait because it needed to be accurate. Shouldn't it have been accurate before? Just a thought. I'm sorry. Thank you, Chair Carlson.
Well, Madam Chair, I think we're probably all constantly learning here. I guess I was assuming that we had received, Madam Chair, a 1095A. Maybe I wasn't observant enough when it came in the mail, because my CPA lives down two doors, and so I just immediately brought him the form. So ours was a 1095C. I guess I just learned something there.
And Carlson.
My last question, and the back and forth about the fine, and I think you said it would take place now. As I read the bill, there would be the $13 million. That's what the fiscal note said. But I do want to put something in context. I, you know, don't know what kind of damage $13 million would cause if this became law to your ability to perform. But as Representative Davids knows and a couple of others on this committee know, at 10 o'clock this morning there's going to be another bill dealing with Mincher, and you're now able to, if I recall correctly, get 2.5% of the premium costs for your overhead. And the bill would reduce that to 1.75%. Now I'll have a chance in that committee to perhaps ask about that, but my only point is that there are two bills up this morning that both could have a major impact on your budget, and I'm not asking you to comment about either one of those at this point. I'm just saying that that's another bill that'll be up, and as I look around, I think three or four of us here on that committee, but I just want to put the thing or put the issue in the full context of the two bills and what that would mean for the budget. But thank you, Madam Chair.
And Representative Carlson, too, we looked it up. It looks like the deadline for the 1095C was March 31st, so tomorrow. So you got yours in time, which is good.
Yeah.
We have Representative, he's gone, so Representative Kahn.
Well, one of the things, and I don't want to pretend that I fully understand this, but I've been told by someone that the current IRS letter online is image only. And does that mean that it's fully accessible to everybody? Or do they really have to check on it by computer?
Mr. Peterson or Ms. Latul?
Madam Chair and Representative Kahn, I don't have that answer. Mr. Peterson, I don't believe you. We're happy to follow up with you on that. I'm not familiar with that.
Representative Kahn.
Well, I guess that was essentially the question. If it's image only, that certainly, if the IRS letter was only sent as an image only thing, it certainly stops a whole lot of people from knowing about it.
So, yeah. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To Mr. Peterson, question for you. So you knew about the requirement to send out the 1095A forms sometime last year. What time of the year last year was that known to you?
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, we knew we had to send the data out as soon. I mean, we did it last year as well. Different requirements around it, but we knew that would be the same this year.
Okay.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so to that point, from an IT coding perspective, you knew that you had a project ahead of you. You probably scoped the project out. You assigned a certain number of people to it, and you had them begin coding. Quick question on the system that you're using. Was that written proprietarily, or is that an off-the-shelf CRM that you bolt things into? How does that all work?
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, so the most of the solution for the system of record, which is where this data comes out, is a custom code solution with an Oracle backend.
Okay, so
Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, thank you. So it's an Oracle database, relational database, that you can actually have a unique identifier representing every payer or person covered and all their information. Knowing Oracle as well as I do, you then also, because I've heard of one of the problems around this was address standardization, which is a pretty simple fix in an Oracle database. There's lax and all other sorts of list cleansing. Was that indeed a problem? Because that's one of the things that I've been hearing.
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, we haven't seen an address standardization issue. Your point about the unique ID is exactly one of the issues where we get data back from the carriers that doesn't contain the unique ID that the Minsure ID system contains. So then there's additional matching that needs to be done to ensure that that specific record is indeed matching to the carrier true files.
Representative Nash.
Madam Chair and Mr. Peterson, so the unique identifier, which is a pretty simple fix from a merge-purge perspective to get a one file and find it and append information to make sure they're both the same, is that one of the issues that has taken now apparently over a year?
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative, the working on this issue, to be clear, didn't start until January again, because we were focused on the transactions to and from the carriers so we could complete the entire process, get effectuation back from the carriers, effectuate the data, and send out the 1095s. What we received back from the carriers to do the true-up is the problem, and what was created was a much more granular matching scenario. The initial one, we started with three sets of key matches that had anywhere from 3 to 10 specific matches based on things like subscriber ID, plan variant, the policy begin dates. And then when we got into the more specific cases, we actually ended up with 12 unique match scenarios at the end of the day. And as we filtered down, it wasn't the issue behind if we knew a individual was in the plan and it was at the carrier. It was more around the changes that were completed throughout the year, and then matching data of households that weren't like households. So in Minshew, they could have had just a mother and father, and in they added a baby throughout the year, and so the data that came back from the carrier had that added household member, or they specifically changed plans from one plan to another plan, or one carrier to another carrier. And so we had in the Minshew system, what the initial transaction that would have went out would have been the January to December enrollment record, with no data back from the carriers. If they changed in June, the data from the other carrier would have had half the year. The first carrier would have had the first part of the year. That's where the complexity came in.
Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, and thank you for that answer. And I can understand the complexity of that. I guess my only question was, from an IT perspective, I know that you were brought in a little late to the game. How was this missed in scoping the project? I mean, this is a fundamental issue as it relates to a large undertaking of an IT project, is to sit back and have a bunch of guys in black T-shirts drinking Diet Mountain Dew whiteboard all the requirements. How was this missed? This is egregious from an IT management perspective. And I know that, you're brought late to the game, but from Minshew, Ms. O'Toole, how was this missed? This is something in my world, in the private sector, this is something that doesn't get missed as you move forward. It is something that you sit down and say, here's the problem, here's the date we have to get this done. We programmed to fix this. How was this missed?
Ms. O'Toole or Mr. Peterson, and then we have other members that have questions, and then we need to go on from there, because we do need to vote on the bill too.
So, Madam Chair, Representative Nash, we were transparent about what we were missing as we went up, which is the discussion around the items specifically related to the carrier data. The project has been in red from, throughout the year last year, reporting up of that and talking about that, being transparent about it. So the fact that I just want to be clear that it wasn't missed, that this was in jeopardy.
Madam Chair, one last question.
Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, and Mr. Peterson, help me understand this. So, and Ms. O'Toole, when we realized that the IT functionality was not getting the job done and we decided to throw bodies at it, what was the operational cost associated with fixing this issue? How many people? I believe you said you've got 200 working on this and that you had 30 to 40, so I'm still trying to figure out, how many people did you throw at the problem, and what did that cost? Because I'm sure that wasn't anticipated early on, obviously. So help me understand that as well.
Ms. O'Toole or Mr. Peterson?
Madam Chair and Representative Nash, I'll answer part of that. We, and maybe have Scott add the technical piece of that. We had a couple of paths of contingency going, one of which you're referencing, where we had 200 staff members dedicated to this. We were able to back off that almost immediately because of another automated solution that Minute helped us with. And Mr. Peterson, if you don't mind describing that, that'd be helpful.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, the tool that Ms. O'Toole is referring to was essentially a generator that would assist with doing multiple PDFs versus a one-off and a one-at-a-time. So essentially taking XML data and feeding into a tool to generate them, as well as generate the back end, the monthly and the yearly for the feds that we needed on our side. As far as cost, I don't have that off the top of my head, Representative Nash, but certainly can get back to you with the cost figures associated to developing the tool and the reactions that happened on the IT side.
Okay. We have, is there anyone else from the audience that wishes to speak to this bill? We are going to be voting at the bill on 1055. If you could please come down to the testifier table, state your name for the record. To this bill.
To this bill, State Government Finance Chair and members, Rick Heller unofficially represents the twice exceptional and freak disabled, testing on this bill, House File 3511. I agree that there needs to be correction. However, I don't believe Jay Wyatt, I've been in communication with him about, he's a chief information officer at Minute, about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I had learned that Minute added in last year to MinSure to help the functionality of the website. And that can harm people if it's not in a functional way. And I believe that that they can't enforce, frankly. They use the carrot, they don't use the rod. So Minnesota Statute 16003, which was passed back in 2009, helps move state agencies to work compliance to Minnesota Statute 16003, which is 508 of the 1973 Rehabilitation Act and 2.0 Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. It's my understanding that functionality is important, how people acquire, enjoy, and motivated with the same services, for instance, from Minute or from MinSure, both with ease and use. Yet, as we look at how it harms so many people, including those part of American Disability Act, frankly, how, again, it's my understanding when you acquire information, there's two ways. There's silent, acquiring, and oral. If you want to make something more functional, frankly, and talk about all these correspondence not getting out in a timely manner, better look at the function of the website, which the auditor never discussed specifically in any great detail, nor is he required to do that on any state agency. It needs to be a standard that he needs to apply as a criteria. It's my understanding the Minnesota legislature can do that. I've been in numerous oral communications with the state auditor, Mr. Nobles. He doesn't get back in writing. But again, as we move to 21st century technology, we need to make sure that this stuff is functional based on the word opportunity. Thank you again for allowing me to testify on this matter.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Members, I've got a whole list of folks that still wish to speak. I'm going to do Representative Lane.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be brief, and I'll just want to say thank you to MinSure for the focus on accuracy. We do not want to have additional problems of people getting the wrong information, so I appreciate that. To this bill, as I understand it, the $13 million to MinSure would happen regardless of whether they do as they say and get them finished by the within the week. If you get it done, you won't have any cost, as I can understand it from the back page here. It would be a $13 million punishment for what's been to date, and therefore it... It strikes me as very punitive, and I understand the anger, I understand the concerns, but I am not in the place to to approach a problem this way. I would approach a problem for the answer and the solution and not for punitiveness.
Representative Kahn.
I just, going back to legislation I did, you know, a while ago, is everything that's gone out ADA accessible? And does it follow the federal rule that it be done at a seventh grade reading level?
Representative Kahn, will get you an answer to that. If Mr. Shepard can check with the department administration, I believe that that was one of the things that they needed to do from last session and some of the language that we adopted. Okay. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have just a few questions remaining because most of the committee members have done a very good job of articulating what I had down on paper, but I wonder if Ms. O'Toole might come back to the testifier stand. Mr. David, you can, Representative Dave, I have a couple questions for you as well, maybe while she's making her way down. Representative Davids, I certainly appreciate you bringing this before the committee. It is, as Representative Lane said, a punishment, but I think the punishment is misplaced. It's not on Minsure. The punishment is actually borne by the Minnesota citizens, given the fact that we're going to have to come up with the money that goes into the general fund that then will go towards paying these penalties, which are just and right. But the reality of the situation is that the Minsure bears no burden for these consequences. Ms. O'Toole, I recognize that you, in a former career path, were the chief deputy attorney for Carver County. And as such, you dealt with the rule of law in prosecuting and or enforcing laws in Carver County for the state of Minnesota. And so, as in some of your testimony, you mentioned that organizations obviously run into challenges and that you will go about addressing those. My first question, Ms. O'Toole, is what consequences do you think that you, as the leader of Minsure and or the board themselves, ought to bear for the abject failure of this program?
Ms. O'Toole.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Albright. You are correct about my career path. And, you know, I report to our board of directors, and so I think, you know, our board chair is someone who can answer the question about my qualifications or suitability for this job. In the last 2 years, I've brought an increasing amount of transparency and accountability to this organization. Part of my job is to face challenges and figure out what is wrong and fix them, and that's exactly what I'm doing here.
Madam Chair.
Representative Albright, I do know that you'll have the...
I just have one question. I'd like a roll call on the bill before I complete my question.
Okay.
This goes to Ms. O'Toole. You've stated that you intend to complete your task with the 1095s this week. Can you categorically, without deference or question, state to us as a committee that that will be accomplished by end of week?
Ms. O'Toole.
Madam Chair and Representative Albright, as I have reported here today, we've made significant progress in the last handful of days. We're at 93%. We anticipate getting out the remainder. It's about 3,000 forms by the end of the week. I hope to do that later today and tomorrow.
Thank you, Ms. O'Toole. And for folks on this, I would like to have a timeline of everything that transpired from March until today. From both you and from Mr. Peterson. I would like to say to Mr. Peterson, I would like greater details in the amount of staff that has been consumed by this. By my calculations, 28% of Minute staff has been consumed by Minsure, and that obviously impacts how Minute operates within the state as a whole, and I'd like to have a conversation with you. I think that we should probably schedule some time later on just to talk about that component here in committee. With that, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 3511 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Albright has asked for a roll call vote.
Chair.
Representative Kahn.
I'd like to move that it be laid over for further hearing. There seem to be lots of unanswered questions, and I don't see any. This is the committee that deals more specifically with it. I don't see any point in having these unanswered questions going to Ways and Means. So I would like to lay this over, and I guess I'd like a roll call vote on that. I usually don't ask for roll calls in committees, but following the example of Representative Albright, I feel that.
Representative Kahn asked for a roll call on House File 3511 to be laid over.
So it's not to be defeated. It's just that we have unanswered questions. Mm-hmm. There are deadlines that are coming up right now, and I think we could act better on this with thoughts at the date at the discretion of the chair.
Ms. Johnson, if you'll take the roll. This is on the motion to lay the bill over.
Representative Anderson S.
No.
Howe.
No.
Johnson.
Yes.
Albright.
No.
Anderson M.
No.
Carlson.
Aye.
Detmer.
No.
Earhart.
Yes.
Kahn.
Yes.
Lane.
Yes.
Lunin.
No.
Nash.
No.
Nelson.
Yes.
Petersburg. You?
No.
Runbeck?
No.
Schultz?
Yes.
On a vote of, it fails on a 9-7 vote. So we are back to Representative Albright's roll call vote on my motion to move House File 3511 to the Ways and Means Committee.
Madam Chair, as amended.
As amended, yes. Thank you, Representative Nelson. As amended, if Ms. Johnson will take the roll.
Representative Anderson S.
Yes.
Howe.
Yes.
Johnson.
No.
Albright.
Aye.
Anderson M. Carlson.
No.
Detmer.
Yes.
Earhart.
Yes.
Kahn.
No.
Lane.
No.
Lunin.
Yes.
Nash.
Yes.
Nelson.
No.
Petersburg. Pugh.
Yes.
Runbeck.
Yes.
Schultz.
No.
On a vote of 10-6, the motion is adopted. With that, members, we are adjourned. Thank you, Chair.